These guys at the GCRN would make great Green Lantern Corps members. Seriously. Who are these guys?
This is Brian T. Stevenson, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
By the power of Grayskull, I command the Jawbridge. Open!
Hello and welcome to GeekCast Radio. I am one of your hosts, Steve Dune Mike, and joining me is Steve Megatron. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Today we welcome a monkey in a barrel of voice acting laughs who is spying on the entire world, Mr. Brian T. Stevenson. Hello, Brian. How are you?
That's clever. I like that.
I try.
I'm good. I'm doing good. Happy Monday.
It's Monday.
It is Monday. I got part of it right.
Yeah, there we go. Brian is the co-owner, right?
I am one half of Spy Monkey Creations, yes.
Yes, he's one half of Spy Monkey Creations. He just recently got his very first voiceover gig, so congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
He is awesome. One of the guest stars on VOBuzz Weekly. He has been on Talking Tunes with his good personal friend, Rob Paulson. What else have you been doing? What was that first gig you got?
I can't really talk about it right now. That's the bummer about a lot of it that I'm doing right now, because I've been working the voiceover thing for probably about 3 or 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough road to hoe. And I'm just now starting to work, and I'm starting to work pretty regularly. Unfortunately, I can't start talking about a lot of the stuff yet because I'm under NDAs.
They're all games, aren't they?
Yeah. So far, most everything's been games. Have done a little bit of animation stuff. But I will say that it is a sequel to a pretty hot franchise, so it should be a lot of fun. But one actor told me, he was like, "Hey, what'd you work on?" And I told him, and he goes, "Everybody's been working on that." And I'm like, "Yeah, but you know what? This is my first paying gig, dude. So, you know, it's five or six, throw four. Yeah. You know, I mean, the check cleared. So all I can say is I'm just waiting for it. I actually went to GameStop today to see if it was available for pre-order, and they're like, "Oh no, not yet." I'm like, "Ah, okay."
Nice.
I'll wait, because I know I'm not going to get a copy. I'm actually going to have to go buy it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so let's start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
I grew up a poor black child. Oh, wait, no, that's the jerk. Never mind.
When did Kevin Michael Richardson show up?
I grew up in a very small town in southern Arizona. I was born in a border town. I was born in Douglas, Arizona, in the year of 1974. And let's see, I grew up in a farming community. One grandfather owned a farm, one grandfather owned a ranch in southern Arizona. Lived there most of my life. I did a couple of stints in Oklahoma City with my mom. Lived with my grandparents most of my life. I've always been, you know, we were latchkey kids when we lived with our mom in Oklahoma. And it was in the 80s, you know, it was from 1982 until probably 87. So it was, you know, I was a latchkey kid during the height of G.I. Joe and He-Man and Transformers and all of the, you know, Jason the Wheeled Warriors, Mask, you know, all of those 80s Centurions. You know, I could go on and on and on. But during that time, you know, we were come home, lock the door. You know, we had codes for the phone to ring when my mom would call. Don't answer the phone unless it was the code ring. You know, I think it was like something like the phone rings twice, then she would hang up and call back, and then that's when we would answer the phone and she would check in on us. Had a series of stepfathers. I think mom's been married 7 times now. So, you know, I never really had a solid male figure in my life. So I picked He-Man and Optimus Prime and Superman and, you know, all of those 80s icons, you know, that, you know, we're all so nostalgic about now. Those guys raised me, you know, they were my surrogate fathers and uncles, and, you know, and I kind of always found refuge in those worlds. So that's kind of what, we lived in Oklahoma from, I believe we moved out there when I was in the third grade, and we moved back to I moved back to my grandparents' house when I was in the seventh grade. So, and then I lived in Arizona until I graduated high school and went to college, and went back to Oklahoma and lived there for about 4 years before I finally moved out to Los Angeles in 1999.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So what made you want to be a toy designer? How did that come about?
The toy designing thing I kind of fell into both times I got into it. Back when I was in college, my major in college was graphic design, advertising and graphic design. And, that wasn't my major. That was my fallback job. My major was theater and cinematic arts. So I was a drama major, which pretty much meant I could, stand on the side of the road with a cardboard sign or get a job as a teacher. So,
I don't know, that cardboard sign stuff worked out for that one guy for a while.
Yeah, it's pretty lucrative for some people. but I started way back in the day. It was probably about 90. Let's see, I graduated high school in the summer of 92, and in the spring of 93, I started working freelance, doing a lot of package art and control art and turnarounds and stuff for Kenner. I worked on a few things. I worked on, like the Superman line, that Man of Steel line that they had, the 5-point of articulation Man of Steel line that they had. I worked on some of that. I worked on some of the stuff for Batman, the third one?
92, 93. Yeah, it was about Forever. The second.
Yeah, Batman Forever. I did a lot of the work on that. A lot of the card art for the characters for those action figures. I did a lot of that. But I did that for quite a while, and then after Tonka had acquired Kenner, and then Hasbro acquired Tonka, and switched everything except Tonka, all the Kenner stuff was brought underneath the Hasbro banner. They kind of cut a swath through all the freelancers and quit using us. And at that point I had moved, away from Arizona back to Oklahoma. And, I had found a full-time job working as a graphic designer for a t-shirt screen printing company. That was kind of my first stint in the toy world. And then when I moved to Los Angeles in 99, I had kind of been, that was when the internet first started kind of coming about, and there were a lot of toy boards and stuff like that. I mean, there weren't a lot of toy boards. There were actually quite a few. I think like Raving Toy Maniac and a couple others had sprouted up. And I was a member on one of those and started, chatting with, different, and I was always a customizer because, when you work in the toy industry, you actually that's how a lot of people start out, is they start out as customizers. And I was a toy customizer, action figure customizer, and I would take pictures of my stuff and post them on some of the forums now and again. And that's how I met Jeremy Sung, who's the other half of Spy Monkey, and his handle is Spy Magician. And him and I met through another mutual friend. We got to know each other online for a good year or two until we finally met at Comic-Con, probably about, I'd say 7 or 8 years ago. And that's kind of once we met, we would all hang out and we'd have custom days where we'd all get together at somebody's house with our big bins of custom figures and, paints and Sculpey and everything. And we'd sit and bash together action figures and stuff like that. Then it just kind of evolved into us doing our own thing, making our own stuff. And, that's kind of how Spy Monkey was born, was just a bunch of customizers getting together and making stuff that, that we liked. And we would post, we would post it on the internet. And as soon as we posted it on the internet, people would start wanting it. So we learned how to produce it and make more, casting. Jeremy learned how to cast And we just started casting and cleaning resin parts and making weapons for, you know, 6 and 7 inch action figures. And, you know, we were making stuff for He-Man and Transformers, you know, just whatever they would work with. So, and that was kind of the genesis of Spy Monkey.
Now, when you say you make weapons for the characters, you mean that you all have a deal with Hasbro or Mattel?
Oh, no, no. We're pretty much just like a third party. We would make, they were all customized, you know, stuff we wanted to see the characters have. And we would, we never actually advertised like, this is a sword for He-Man or this is a shield for.
Right. But you can tell by the look of it. I've seen a lot of the stuff. I'm actually on the site now and I've seen a lot of the weapon stuff. I've seen Pixel Dan, that jerk, review a lot of the good stuff that you guys do. That's for his Facebook comment. You know, I mean, you all do some amazing, amazing work.
Thank you.
I'm looking at the, before Steve takes over for voiceover stuff, I'm looking at the Weapons of Monka set. How are those 6 and 7 inches or are those 5 inch figures? Because they look pretty small.
The Weaponeers of Monka. Yes.
Yes.
They are, they're about 4 inches tall.
Okay.
They're not 6 and 7 inches. Mainly that was because of tooling costs are not cheap anymore. You know, they've never been cheap, but here in recent years, the US dollar has just taken a nosedive in the foreign market. And you know, this is the real boring business kind of stuff, but in order for us to make them, we had to make them pretty small. And we used the Glio system, which is a system of pegs and holes that kind of hold together, and they all snap apart and are all reconfigurable. Yeah. And we use that on all of our product now. After we graduated from doing hand cast resin and went into production, we exclusively use the Glio system on everything. And you can only get so big with that before it doesn't really work anymore. And three and three quarter to 4 inch is about as tall as you want to go with that stuff. And we kind of saw a lot of the collecting trends going that way. You know, everything's shrinking down. I mean, even Transformers are starting to shrink down. The new deluxe Transformers are, you know, half the size of what a deluxe used to be. I got my hands on the new Trail Cutter the other day, and I was just kind of like, aw.
You know, it seems like the quality has gone down on them too, on the Transformers.
Yeah, I think they're really pushing the tolerances of what they can get away with wall thickness on the plastics now. Just because of how, in order to stay competitive, you know, and keep competitive prices, they've got to, because of the way that the factories and the materials and everything just keeps rising in labor, you know, labor costs, material costs, everything like that. It's really kind of sad. It's kind of hard to be a toy maker right now, unless you're just loaded. And even the larger corporations are, you know, they're really cutting back on what they're willing to spend on new toy lines, and even existing ones that are proven. You know, I'm really surprised that the Star Wars Black Series that they're doing even had any kind of legs whatsoever. But it's
crazy. I'm looking at this, the Monka set, and the only thing I can think of with the leader and the villain is he's got an Optimus Prime looking head.
Yeah,
and the villain, the gray and red villain, Paladar. He's got.
He's not a villain.
He's not.
No. Paladar's okay. Paladar is.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Paladar is the. He's the commander of the Giro forces. We have good guys and bad guys. We have the Giro and the Vilhain in that first wave of figures, which is probably what you're looking at on the site. Yeah. The Giro, who are the good guys, are comprised of Imperius Rex, and he usually just goes by Imperius. And he's the red guy that looks like, looks a little bit.
His head, his ears do.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of Optimus Prime hot rod kind of. There's several little homages thrown into these guys. One of my favorite toys as a kid and one of my favorite cartoons was GoBots. And so Paladar's got a real kind of copter look to him. If you look at Umbreus, who's the leader of the bad guys, he's got a real kind of Skeletor's face with Megatron's helmet kind of thing going.
It's really cool though.
And kind of what we did was we got to thinking, you read, you go on any of these fan sites, you go on any of the G.I. Joe or He-Man or Transformers fan sites, and it's really hard for new content to be created with these characters that people have so much nostalgia for. Because one misstep and the fandom just goes insane that you're ruining the canon. You know, I mean, they just go nuts. So we were like, well, rather than try to license, you know, some other toy line or something that people have a lot of nostalgia for, you know, we realized that the reason why a lot of us, you know, guys in our mid to late 30s that are all pushing 40 are still buying these action figures and these toys is because of the nostalgia we have for them from our youth. And we really are kind of the nostalgia generation. So we decided that if we were going to design an action figure line, we wanted to design something that would take elements and bits of that nostalgia and really kind of hodgepodge them together. You know, when we debuted at PowerCon last year in September, people would walk by the table and look at the figures and there'd be, you know, oh, that reminds me of GoBots, or that reminds me of Transformers, or that reminds me of Voltron, or that reminds me of He-Man, or that reminds me, you know, they would, you know, Thundercats. I mean, there were people, the Mighty Orbots, the Bionic Six, you know, it's like people, there was something that reminded people of, you know, Battle Beasts, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. It's like we heard everything. And that's kind of what, when we knew, it's like, okay, well, everybody gets what we tried to do here. And with that, since they're all brand new characters, we get to write the story and we get to come up with the world, and it's fresh and it's new. And it's, you know, it's like, it's kind of exciting for people. We get stuff all the time, and little kids love our stuff. You know, little kids just go nuts over it. We hear stuff all the time from parents that are like, oh yeah, we love the stories. We read them to our kid as bedtime stories and can't wait for the next one. And when's the net, you know, when are the next figures coming out? And you know, we just had our very first booth at Comic-Con in San Diego that we shared with October Toys last month, and did amazing. You know, we debuted a couple of fun homage figures to some other 80s properties, just taking our existing figures and just repainting them. And, yeah. You know, putting them in, casting them in different plastic and repainting. We cast them like a flesh plastic. Flesh colored plastic, and we did one that was kind of like the muscle figures. He was all just this big pink plastic flesh, you know, looking dude. And then the other one, we kind of we paid tribute to Mike Grell's Warlord figure from the DC Comics. It's been so much fun. You know, it's like, we absolutely love this product, and it's the response to it's been more than what we could have imagined.
Yeah. It's just absolutely amazing what you all are creating out there. And that's great that you guys had a good showing at Comic-Con. 'Cause once you go Comic-Con, you can't go back.
No. Well, and that was the thing too. It's, you know, Comic-Con has gotten so expensive too, that you can't really go to Comic-Con and expect to make the amount of money that you spent on the booth back, really. It's more for the exposure, and we got some pretty good exposure, and some pretty neat things are starting to happen. Not anything I can really talk about, but some really neat things are starting to happen. We caught the eye of some pretty important people.
Well, that's good.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Very awesome.
So what made you want to get into, or what even sparked you to get into the voiceover business?
You know, it's kind of the same thing that got me into the toys. You know, I grew up as a child of the 80s. You know, I grew up, you know, like I said, we were latchkey kids, and I became more familiar with these characters than I did some of my own family members. You know, it's like I was always in front of the TV, and it didn't take me long to realize that, you know, hey, Cobra Commander and Starscream are the same dude. And there were other things too. There were a lot of them that I started picking up on them, and eventually, I think the first person I ever really picked up on was Rob Paulson. I think he's the first person I picked out as being, okay, that's the same guy. That's the same guy that's doing that voice, that's doing that voice, that's doing that voice. And I realized there are people doing this. There are actually, it's like, these aren't little dudes living in the box. You know, these are guys, you know, just going to a job every day, and not everybody is Mel Blanc. You know, back when I was, you know, little, it was either Mel Blanc or Dawes Butler. Those guys were the voice guys. And if there was a girl, it was usually June Foray. You know, the cartoons that I, you know, in my early youth that I grew up watching, there were three people doing all those voices. And so it was like, okay, well, that's their job. No one else can do that. And then when the 80s rolled around and there was this big, huge animation boom, you know, with Filmation and Sunbow and all these other, you know, companies putting stuff out, it dawned on me at a pretty early age that, wow, there's guys doing this for a living. And I had done some stuff. I was in a lot of plays and stuff like that when I was a kid. But never really had any kind of direction or guidance in it. And then when I got into high school, I went to a play, and I think it was The Diary of Anne Frank, of all plays. You know, not the most cheerful thing to watch.
No, not at all.
But the girl that played Anne Frank, I got a huge crush on her, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to join drama because I want to meet that girl. I was a freshman. She was a senior. So, you know, what shot did I have? But what the heck, you know, I was a cocky little bastard. So the next semester rolled around and I joined the drama department. I took the drama class and the first time I got on stage, I think we were doing, we did the Christmas Carol, and I played Bob Cratchit, and I got up on stage and I don't even remember how it happened, but I got people in the audience just rolling. And I don't know if it, you know, I can't remember what it was I was doing. But that you hear that first guffaw out in the audience, and I was just, okay, I'm hooked. What girl? You know, that was just kind of, and I was hooked. And my entire high school career, I mean, we wound up having one of the most competitive theater departments in any, you know, small town high school in Arizona. We were constantly, by the time I was a senior, we were all winning national awards and getting scholarships, and I wound up getting a scholarship, went to college, majored in theater, and, you know, I did a stint with some improv troupes, with some professional theater companies, a couple in Arizona, one in Oklahoma. In 99, I was just kind of, I was like, okay, it's time for me to move out to Los Angeles. And the guy at the local comic book store said, hey, I know this other guy who's local that's about to move to L.A. Why don't you get in touch with him? And so, you know, he exchanged phone numbers, and I called him, and he's like, yeah, I'm moving out. Why don't you come crash on my couch till you can find a place? So I, you know, drove out here, crashed on the dude's couch, looked for an apartment, looked for a job, you know, found both, moved out to L.A. Full time. I've been out here ever since. And I actually pursued on camera live act, because, again, you kind of were always given this thing. It's like, well, there's a very small handful of people that do voiceover, and it's the hardest thing in the world to break into. The only way to get in is if somebody dies and you can do what they did. But likely when that person dies, there's 10 other people already doing it that can just step up and do what he's doing. And so that was kind of a, you know, it was kind of off-putting. You didn't really have any kind of, there was nothing to build your confidence into getting into it. And there was no internet, you know, there really was nothing to where they, you know, it's like everything was in complete anonymity. And I tried out the on-camera acting for a while. And I was working as a PA in a lot of animation. So I started getting to know all of the animation actors. As a matter of fact, the first time I ever ran into Rob Paulsen, I scared the crap out of him because he thought he was getting mugged. He was walking out.
You gotta tell that story.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was like, and it's one of those things, you know. It's like, and I told him the day I met him, I said, "You won't ever remember this, but I'll never forget it." You know, because he was so cool to me. He was so nice, and he was, I mean, the guy that you hear, that's the real dude, man. He's not put on. He is not put on. He's not, you know. He is the most genuine and one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met in my entire life. And, you know, it's like I had kind of, you know, I'd gone to all of the voiceover panels at Comic-Con, and I'd sat in the back of the room and I'd watched them all. And, you know, and Mark Evanier comes in and mediates all of them. And he's, you know, he's a nice guy and I adore him. But he's also got this kind of thing where he tells the audience, yeah, don't even bother. You know, these guys are top of their game. These guys are the elite. You'll never be this. So unless you've got, you know, 10 years to and the drive and the desire, you won't get here. So it's kind of discouraging when you hear people say that all the time. So I never really pursued it. Well, Rob's walking out of the Academy building, the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences building, and I'm walking in because I was working the animation show that I was working on was officing there. And I'm walking in, and this is before, like I said, this was, you know, they had complete anonymity at this point. Nobody knew who they were. And he walks out of the building, and I'm like, oh my God, you're Rob Paulsen. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, you're Yakko, you're Pinky, you're Raphael. You know, it's like, and I'm just like, I was like, you're Snow Job. You know, it's like, I'm losing my mind. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I told him, I said, you know, you're my favorite actor. You are one of my absolute, I was like, you raised me. I said, you have been in my life since, you know, since the Smurfs, you know, since as long as I can remember, you know, and it just, and he was touched, and we sat there and we talked for about 20 minutes. And I said, you know, how do I get into, and he says, act. He says, have you ever done any acting? And I said, yeah, I you know, that's why I'm here, is I'm an actor. And he's like, well, keep it up, buddy. And that was it, except for seeing him at Comic-Con and passing like once a year, you know. I kind of, you know, I was always interested in it, but never really pursued it. And then in my day job and what I do, you know, to actually pay the rent, I got to know a lot of the voice actors, and I got to know, you know, I got to know guys like Tom Kenny, and I got to know guys like Billy West and Jess Harnell and all those guys. And, so much so that, you know, go hang out and have a beer and go bowling with Tom Kenny now and again. And
nice.
He was
bowling with SpongeBob.
Yeah, you know, and in joking back and forth and riffing off of one another and everything. Probably about 4 years ago, he was like, "Man, why aren't you getting paid to do this?" He said, "You really need to get." He said, "You ought to, you know, try it out." I'm like, "Well, how do I go about it?" And he goes, "Man, I don't know, because my intuit was so weird, you know, because he started as a stand up and."
Yeah,
and doing all kinds of stuff. So his intuit was a little unorthodox from what the actual, you know, point A to point B was. But what I've learned is the point A to point B in this business is a very squiggly line, and no one's is the same. And so Comic-Con rolled around again, and I had gotten my demo together, put all that together. I had started taking a few classes, and my wife actually had a huge deal, you know, a huge. As you know, holds most of the responsibility for getting me into this, because she said, well, for Christmas, she says, I'm going to get you your first voiceover class. So she got me my first voiceover class. She had me do the research, find one that I thought I could learn from. And I went and did it. And my first time in the booth, the teacher was like, are you sure you've never done this before? And so that was kind of like, oh, well, yeah, you know, I'm an actor. It's not, you know, this is just acting to me. It's like the funny voices and that all kind of stuff, you know, that comes later, but you know, it's like, this is all just acting. And so then I hit up Rob again at Comic-Con that year, and he had just started doing his podcast and just started doing his private coaching. And I said, I would love to do some private coaching with you. I just, you know, I'm about a year in, and would really like to get together with you sometime. And he's like, oh yeah, sure. Well, schedules being what they are, we couldn't get together until almost December. And you know, it's like, this was at Comic-Con that we spoke first. Yeah. So in December we finally got together, and in our talking and everything, he said, would you come and be a guest on my podcast? He said, because you're doing what a lot of people are always asking me about. He says, I don't know how to get into it. Today, right. It's a different beast than it was when he did it 30 years ago. And he's like, yes. So I, you know, he's like, I don't know how. And he's like, so would you kind of be, you know, he said, would you kind of come on and help some people out? And in all of that, I've become this strange, unofficial ambassador to the up and coming voice actor. To where, you know, I mean, I've been on Rob's podcast, I've been on VO Buzz Weekly, and you know, there's a few other podcasts that I've done. Talking about the voiceover and stuff and the voice acting and breaking in to animation and video games and stuff. And I've just kind of become this ambassador, you know, is about the only word I can think of for it, you know. Mm-hmm. My reasoning for doing it is I just, I can't think of doing anything else. You know, it's like whenever I get inside the booth, you know, and I've had a, you know, I've always had day jobs. I've always worked one or two jobs. You know, it's like I do the toy stuff and that's fun and I'm passionate about that and it's really important to me. But when I get into the voice booth, that's where the universe is telling me I need to be. You know, it's like I get in that booth and it's just like when I proposed to my wife, you know, it's like I get the same feeling, you know, it's like I'm supposed to be here. And that's, you know, I just, and I grew up and I'm working now with the people that I grew up admiring, you know, it's a constant, like pinch myself kind of scenario every time, you know, every time I walk into a room and I'm just like, wow, I'm working with these dudes today. You know, it's like, these are the guys that I used to sit, you know, after school every day and, you know, and that taught me, they taught me all my lessons. They taught me how to grow up and they taught me how to, you know, how to do this and how to do that. And, you know, they taught me morals and they taught me, you know, just all kinds of stuff, you know? So it's a surreal blessing, you know, but it's a lot of fun. I enjoy doing it.
We know you're not going to, or you can't reveal any of the current stuff, but like, can you reveal anyone that you've worked with, like in, like actually in a session?
I've worked with, let's see here. Most recently I've worked with Mick Wingert, who is the voice of, Po in, Kung Fu Panda Legends of Awesomeness. He's a dead on voice match for Jack Black.
That's awesome.
And, him and I became really fast friends. But most recently I've worked with him. Let's see. I'm trying to think. I wasn't in the booth with them, but I kind of was in passing with Yuri Lowenthal and Steve Bloom and let's see, Stacey Oswald from VO Buzz Weekly.
Yeah,
let's see. I'm trying to think who all else was working on that game that we were all kind of, we were all kind of passing each other in the lobby, as you know, it's like, cause they had us all come in singly and do records, yeah. Cause it was all NPC stuff. And let's see, gosh, let's see, Bob Joles, I think was working on that one. You know, Matt Mercer probably did a little bit of work on it. And I've known Matt, who was Tigra in the latest Thundercats.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I've known Matt Mercer for, oh my gosh, probably about 10 years. So it's like him and I kind of come up together a little bit. He obviously struck a lot quicker than I did, but yeah, you know, and it's weird for me because I'm 38 years old. So, you know, it's like, and I'm just now starting to break in, but then I talk to guys like Tom Kenny and I talk to guys like Steve Bloom and they're like, oh yeah, man, I was almost 40 before I booked my first real big thing. You know, so it's interesting that I'm kind of just right now at that nice ripe age that they just all of a sudden the work just starts coming in. So,
yeah, not everyone can, you know, be a 28-year-old, go out to California and in 3 years become Raphael.
No, not at all. Not at all. But almost, no.
Yeah, almost.
I auditioned for that role. I auditioned for.
Oh, did you really?
I auditioned for Raphael, and I got so close. But you know, I mean, it happens. You know, it's like and Sean Astin is phenomenal. I think he's just killing it. I think he's doing such a great job in that role.
That show is so awesome.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like I watch everything. I watch, you know, every new cartoon that comes out. You know, if for anything, I watch at least one episode. Very rarely do I get wrapped up in something where I watch every episode, but, like Green Lantern and Young Justice and, you know, Ninja Turtles and, you know, some of the more grown up cartoon stuff, you know, it's like, and that's the thing is like Ninja Turtles is awesome because I mean, it grabs
it. It's
there's enough in it for all of us guys that grew up just loving the original stuff. I mean, you can't walk into, at least around here, you can't walk into a Toys R Us or a Target that the pegs just aren't wiped clean of all the Ninja Turtle stuff.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and just like back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. And good luck any of those other cartoons that, you know, I mean,
mainly because of Mattel,
that has, you know, that have any toys on the shelf. You know, I hate to flick a booger, but, you know, I mean, it's the truth. You know, I mean, They, you know, I mean, the Green Lantern, you know, that show was so awesome.
I just
and don't... none of the retailers, because of the movie, none of the retailers wanted the toys. And well, without the toys, yeah. they can't support the cartoon, you know?
That's one thing about the animation business that I wish was not true.
Yeah.
It's tied into everything else in Hollywood. And if this doesn't succeed, well, if that isn't succeeding, let's take away this perfectly successful cartoon series that everyone... Like, I just got, a couple months ago, I got the... both volumes of the Green Lantern animated series score from La La Land Records. The music of that show is just amazing.
Yeah, mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing.
It's just amazing hearing it without the... I mean, hearing it in the show is great, but hearing it by itself is just amazing. Yeah. And I don't like how Hollywood is treating animation these days on any show, not just specifically Green Lantern or Young Justice, but it's just one of those things where, sadly... if the toys don't sell, or if a movie bombs, and then the toy company's like, yeah, we can't even, you know, take a dump truck up to this retailer and just give them the toy. Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's like, well, and
it's so bad.
And on the flip side of that, you get a successful movie, and they decide to make an animated series based on the movie, and the only guys that are working are the guys that can do voice matching. Because they have all these celebrities in the movie that won't do the animated series. So then the trickle down, it's like all of us get a chance, but if we don't sound like and can't do an impression, then you know, we're not going to get the work. So it's weird being on this side of it after being on the fanboy side of it for so long. Yeah. Because I understand the frustration on that side, but then I have to kind of look at the business on this side and go, "Oh, yeah, well, that makes sense." You know, it's like that. So it's hard to be in a position that I'm in, because there are a few, especially the newer talent, that are grown up geeks, you know, that are grown up fanboys. But most of them aren't, so they don't really understand that side of the whole thing. But being that I was a fanboy first, you know, and grew into it. It's rough to see, you know. It's like we were at Emerald City Comic Con. We had a booth, and we were right around the corner from the local comic book shop in Burbank. They had a booth there too. This was up in Seattle, and Bruce Timm is friends of the owners of that store, and he came and did kind of a ninja sketch bomb thing there, where he just kind of slinked in and sat down at the table unannounced and was doing sketches and signing stuff for people. So then he wasn't getting mobbed, but people would walk by and go, "Oh, it's Bruce Timm," you know, and scrambling for whatever it is they brought with them to sign. And you know, we were sitting there and, you know, hearing him talk about the whole Green Lantern and Young Justice thing and how the animation, you know, it's really was just because the toy, you know, it's like the toys came either too late or because the movie didn't do well and all of those Green Lantern toys rotted on the pegs. The retailers were afraid to commit to any of the animated stuff. And, you know, and it just because, you know, Mattel will swear up and down they never made toys and they never had anything planned. But I've seen them, you know.
Well, they had the Young Justice line. They canceled the line before they even canceled the show.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that, too. I mean, unfortunately, those were some pretty lousy toys. Mm. You know, I mean, they were great little, you know, standalone figures if you just wanted to display them. But as actual toys, they were lousy toys. They were great action figures. They were great looking figures. They were beautiful. But they were lousy toys, and that's the thing. If you're gonna, you know, it's like you really have to make toys. You can't make some little, like, you know, art piece. That's why I'm surprised JLU lasted as long as it did. But JLU was really kind of that had a fan following, and that was kept alive by all of us grown-ups. That wasn't kept alive by the kids.
No, and they basically marketed the JLU toy line to collectors. Yeah. I mean, and anything that's on MattyCollector.com, you know, it's marketed towards collectors. And I will say that one thing that, yes, Hasbro does market sometimes towards collectors, but 90% of the time it's for, hey, what can we do for the kids? Like you already said, the deluxes are downsized to the point where, and they even said this year at BotCon and SDCC that the reason is they want to make the, apparently they listen to some of the YouTube reviewers. They want to make the transformation simpler for kids. And when I was a kid, I could transform Megatron gun form, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, Soundwave was the easiest. Soundwave and Blaster, the two easiest Transformers to ever come along with the G1 line.
Oh, and Optimus Prime, too. Optimus Prime was...
Yeah, Optimus.
I think they used the transformation thing as a gimmick anyway, just to, like, as a cop-out for... they're trying to cut costs.
Well, yeah, you know. I mean, well, and honestly, I think that, you know, out of all of the toy companies, Hasbro's really kind of got... they kind of figured it out. They've got their high-end collector lines that they're doing, but then they've dialed back all of the mass retail stuff to 5 points of articulation, you know, simpler sculpts, simpler decos and everything like that. Cause honestly, kids, man, when I was a kid, and the reason, and this is why our toys are the kind of toys they are. And they're not, you know, these high end spindly little, you know, I mean, pretty shelf pieces, because when a kid picks up my toy, I want him to be able to huck that sucker across the street, let it get hit by the bus, and have him pick it up, and, you know, it's no worse for the wear. It might have a couple of paint scratches on it or whatever. Because when I was a kid, that's what that was He-Man. You know, He-Man was like that. G.I. Joe was like that. You know, I think the most careful I had to be with toys were Transformers. But any other toys I had, man, I beat the holy living crap out of those toys playing with them. And I think Hasbro's doing a smart thing by going into their more simplified stuff for retail, because they're being able to bring that price point down, you know, but still offering stuff that's a little higher end for the collectors. You know, it's like, and they've learned that the collectors don't mind paying a little bit of a premium if they get, you know, exactly what they're asking for. So that's, you know, but Transformers is that one line that they haven't really, except for their masterpiece stuff, you know, they haven't really started to do that with Transformers yet, but with all of the other lines, they're really starting to figure that out. And I think, you know, I mean, that's kind of, you know, for all of their, you know, I mean, just kind of, you know, facepalm foibles that these big toy companies do, it's neat to kind of see them evolve that way, you know, based on the demands of the marketplace.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just like, I know a lot of the I know a lot of these cartoons cost money. You know, you look at Transformers Prime. Yes, that had, between Optimus and Bumblebee, it did have slight movie designs, but that cartoon has nothing to do with the Michael Bay movies whatsoever. And I know it cost the Hub an exuberant amount of money, but that show still could have lasted one more season.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and the Hub is owned by Hasbro. So it's, you know, that's Hasbro's channel. So that's you know, Hasbro paid for all that. But you know, I also think that, you know, Transformers is this interesting thing where now that they do have movies, you know, where they do have to kind of, they're a slave to that, you know, a little bit with the way they do the toys. And it's interesting to see how, you know, how much, you know, that look for the first little bit seeps over into any animation that they do. And, you know, and just because the Beast Hunters is ending, I don't think that means that Transformers animation is ending. It's like it's...
Oh, no, yeah, yeah, no, yeah. No, it's not. It just... To me, the way I heard about it was they've got 65 episodes for syndication, and they've ended they're going to finalize the story in the TV movie Predacons Rising, but then next year they're going to start up a new cartoon that might somewhat be a continuation of this one. We don't know yet what it's going to be, but when I first heard about it is, they're going to cancel Prime, they're going to start a new cartoon, and then my thought is, oh, wait, the next movie's coming up, so let's see. That new cartoon, is that going to get canceled in favor of another movie thing? It's kind of like what you mentioned earlier about Green Lantern, you know, the movie versus the animated series. It's like, because one thing did something, and the other thing gets affected, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and that's it's sad, and it's hard. Yeah, it's sad, and it's hard to watch. But you know, I mean, unfortunately, it is a truth, and kind of the way the wheels work out here.
Yeah, it's all holy weird. That's exactly what it is.
Holy weird, yeah.
Oh boy. So what else is coming up for you? I mean, is there anything that you can tell us about anything that you're working on, whether it's Spy Monkey or the voiceover stuff? I mean, I know you said you've signed NDAs and you can't reveal too much, but
for Spy Monkey, we have another drop coming up in the middle of this month. It'll be a glow in the dark colorway. So the plastic that we ran the figures in a glow in the dark plastic. We sold a few of them at San Diego Comic-Con just to kind of tease it a little bit. And then we've got probably about two or three more drops, two or three more waves throughout the end of the year that are one or two figures a piece. And then we have a special figure for PowerCon, kind of like we did for Comic-Con. And then we have a special figure for DesignerCon, which is another convention here in Los Angeles, in Pasadena, I think, in November. And then there's some other stuff going on for Spy Monkey I can't really talk about right now, but some pretty awesome stuff. You know, we, like I said, Comic-Con was pretty cool for us as far as, exposure and some new things coming down the pipe. But then, as far as voice acting goes, I've recently auditioned. I don't, you know, I mean, you never know with this stuff, you know, until you hear about it. Right. I've been getting invited to audition for a lot of stuff, which is usually they want to hear my take on certain things, whether or not I actually, you know, wind up as the character I'm auditioning for is something else. I don't really know, but a lot of the times when you get invited to audition for something, they want to hear you just so they can be like, okay, well, when we're ready, we'll call on this guy. That's how I've been booking the video games, actually, is a guy that I met, Chris Borders, who was the director of games like Gears of War and Mass Effect and, you know, a lot of those really big, you know, some Final Fantasy games and stuff like that. Wow. He's the one who called me in. And it was off a relationship I started building in back at Comic-Con. And he called me and he said, man, I've been wanting to get you in on something. I'm glad I had this opportunity to call you in. And it's really great to have you here. And we'll get you in on more stuff. And then I audition for stuff for Disney all the time. I actually got an audition today that I'm going in for tomorrow, where I'm playing three characters in the audition. You know, who knows if I'll book it or not. But it's basically three characters, all with the same accent, but they want a different voice for all three guys.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Yeah, I wish. but yeah, it's having to change and affect my voice for different stuff. And then let's see, what else have I recently done? I worked on the Bible recently. did like some background ADR for like an audiobook narration kind of dramatization of the Bible. So that was interesting. A lot of, you know, screaming and yelling and all just background kind of stuff.
I was going to say, you must be really old if you worked on that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus signed my yearbook. Yeah.
But, why is Chris Rock popping into my head?
Yeah. Let's see. What else have I been working on? Just did a pilot for Fox. I don't know if it's a. It's probably a primetime pilot. Just did that, but then being that it's a pilot, unless the network picks it up, you know, it may never air. No one may ever see it, but you know, I mean, that's something I've worked on recently. But yeah, it's starting to come in, you know, there's some pretty regular stuff coming in. So it's just a matter of, you know, and I've had a lot of close calls, you know, like I said, with, you know, there was Ninja Turtles, and I actually got called back into audition for another character. I think they've already revealed who he is. I think at Comic-Con they revealed, did they reveal who's playing Casey Jones at Comic-Con?
They revealed that Casey's coming. I don't know if they've
revealed who's playing him. Okay.
The voices that, well, I know the voice is out there because I've seen video. I've heard the voice. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who it is.
I do. I do, but I can't find out anything. Let's see. Yeah, I was actually in on a record session that he was in on. Rob invited me to come be a guest, and that was a lot of fun. I was there the day that Corey Feldman was there. Recording his stuff, and I don't know if they've revealed who he is yet or not. I think they have. I don't want to spill the beans though, because like I said,
come on, give us
future
a
Raph.
Go viral.
Future Raph. Well, Raphael has a pet.
Oh no!
Slash,
do not tell me that Corey is the voice of the pet.
Well,
and by his laughter, I know it's true.
Yeah.
Josh Peck is Casey.
There you go. Okay. So they have revealed. Yeah, Josh Peck from Drake and Josh, I think, is the show that he used. Yeah.
The funny thing is, Wikipedia says Casey Jones, voiced by Josh Peck. Role not yet revealed.
Oh, nice, nice. Good for Wikipedia. But yeah, you know, I mean, it's really cool, you know, because Casey Jones is a role that I auditioned for. You know, and it's kind of a thing too. And it's like you've auditioned for something, and then you walk into the record session to see the guy that actually has the part that you auditioned for. And mm-hmm. It's a weird thing in voice acting because, you know, it's like in any other thing, it gets competitive, and you're like, you know, but it's not that way in voice acting. You know, it's like all I could do was congratulate the dude, man, because I was just like, wow, man, because he's killing it. He was doing a great job, and you know, it's like. It's you know, I just wasn't right for it, you know? And so you just have to sit around and wait for the one that you are right for, you know. It's like and be ready to bring it when it comes across your, you know, when they fire the script across your bow, be ready to do it, you know, at the drop of a hat if they call you and say, okay, you're the one we want. So
yeah,
because there's times that I'll get a call on a Monday and they'll be like, yep, you're working tomorrow. You know, and it'd be like, what is it? Well, it's a video game. You'll know when you get there. You know, I'll walk in and literally not have the script, nothing, you know, and they'll hand it to me when I walk in and they're like, okay, we got 2-3 hours. Let's knock this out. And I'll have, you know, all these lines. You know, I mean, animation's a little different because it's like you kind of know the character. Like I said, this thing that I'm auditioning for tomorrow is pretty established. It's a kid's show. And so I get to be I get to have a little bit more fun with my voice. I get to be a little bit more cartoony, which is a lot of fun. Cause everything's so serious and dour now, you know, it's like, there's hardly yeah. like fun anymore. And it, you know, it's like, everything's just very, you know, just dark and dreary. So it's nice to get one where it's like, you know, you just get to kind of go in the booth and make a jackass out of yourself, you know, for 4 hours and then they write you a check.
That's the best kind of pay.
It is.
What are some shows that, or properties, or of games, or any of that kind of voiceover stuff that you'd like to be able to try and get into, or love to put your chops to?
Well, Turtles. I would love to work on Turtles. And like I said, it's like I've been fired at that thing at least 3 times. Law of averages, eventually I'll wind up being in there and being somebody. I'd love to play Ace Duck if they ever get around to putting Ace Duck in that show. He was one of my favorite figures as a kid, so I'd love to play that character. Let's see, game wise, I love like big epic RPGs when I'm playing video games, so I'd love to get into a series like that, like a Mass Effect or an Elder Scrolls or something like that, Dragon Age, you know, one of those big sweeping, you know, epic kind of things, you know, Lord of the Rings type stuff, fantasy, sci-fi, you know. I'm not real big into military games and stuff like that. I don't play a lot of those. I audition for a ton of them. But, you know, to me, that's just, you know, that's just a job, you know, it's like going in and doing the journeyman kind of actor thing. I would love to work on a Transformers cartoon at some point. I would love to work on one of the DC movies. You know, even if it's just a little bit voice, you know, I would love to work on something like that. I would love nothing more in the world than to have Weaponeers of Mon-Ka become an animated series. You know, that's something that's a dream of mine, to see my own toys, you know, made into an 80s style cartoon. When they teased with the Thundercats that they were like the Silverhawks and Tiger Sharks and all those others that were kind of in the background in one of those episodes.
That was the hugest tease in the world,
wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
And it just never got paid off because
Bandai. Yeah,
ugh.
Yeah. Well, I mean that was a two-way. See, that's the other thing too. Is like it's ugh. The toy company, the network, the production company, you know, it's like there's so many variables into those things. But I would love to play if a Silverhawks cartoon ever got made, I'd love to play Bluegrass. You know, that would be one character that I'd really lobby for to get in on. And then Skylanders. I'd love to work on Skylanders. I play the heck out of those games, and I missed the latest one. The auditions for that, I don't know what happened. I didn't get my agent, you know, either for some reason, either didn't get any of the sides for that, or, you know, it wasn't on the, you know, it was kind of a kept in the family kind of thing. I don't know what happened with that one, but the newest Skylanders, or anything, or any iteration after that one, I'd love to work on that game.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So tell everybody your secrets of kicking in the voice acting door.
Kicking in the voice acting door.
Like, what's your advice for people? Because Steve
I am very enthusiastic in studying up and trying to work my way that direction. I know I'm nowhere ready yet, but the world of voiceover and that kind of stuff has always intrigued me, even as a kid.
Yeah. Well, act, you know, community theater, you know, if you've got a local radio station or anything, I mean, doing a podcast is, you know, that's a step in the right direction too, because, you know, or doing any kind of anything where you use your voice on a regular basis, because you learn how it works with the microphone. You learn how it sounds when it's recorded. A lot of people, they'll record their voice and be like, that doesn't sound anything like me. I don't sound like that. You know, it's like, and they're not real comfortable. It's getting comfortable with your instrument and getting comfortable with you, with your abilities. You know, that's the main thing, you know, and being cool or being good gets you in the door. Being cool keeps you in the room. So having a career at it, you know, I think Tom Kane was just on Rob's podcast last week. And one of the things he said was like, you know, it's like these are, you know, most of the guys that do it for a living and do it on a regular basis are the guys that show up on time, are fun to work with, are easygoing. They're not, you know, a-holes. You know, they're good, you know, they're good, fun people. And, you know, and that's what it really boils down to, is like, you know, and one of the things Rob says, it's, you know, it's luck meeting opportunity. And when that luck meets that opportunity, when, if you're ready to bring it, you know, if you've got the talent and you've got the goods, when those two things collide, then, you know, you get your foot in the door, you know, then, you know, it starts to roll. And, you know, one of my things is I'm always in the public eye. You know, if I can't, you know, in one way or the other, whether it's through Spy Monkey or whether it's through my voice acting stuff, social media, I'm always on the social media. And now it's like, you know, I've got people that I'll have agents and casting directors that follow me on Facebook or Twitter or things like that. They'll walk up to me at an event and be like, oh, I saw what you posted the other day. Ha ha ha, that was so funny. We'll need to get you in one of these days to work on such and such show. You know, and it's based on a tweet that I did 4 months ago, you know. And so,
That's awesome.
It's, you know, I mean, there's so many factors into it. But as far as, you know, when getting yourself ready and getting your instrument ready, it's, you know, I mean, if you're doing a podcast, doing any kind of local radio or TV spots, if you can, you know, if you can find, you know, where those are done, local commercials, you know, it's like Rob said before, you know, when he was in Detroit and coming up, you know, it's like he'd do commercials for the local sporting goods shop, you know, and stuff like that, just to kind of, you know, build his reel and his resume and everything, you know. So there's, and I did the same thing when I was in high school. I was a DJ at the local radio station, and I worked two different stations. I worked like a rock top 40 station at night, and I worked the AM country station on the weekends. And that's kind of, you know, one of the things where I got started, you know, learning how my voice now sounds on a microphone, and how to when you get up closer to the mic and when you back away from the mic, you know, I mean, just how it affects your voice doing different things. So, you know, and there's plenty of classes. Where are you located?
Actually, I'm in the Grand Blanc, Michigan area.
Oh,
same place, Rob.
Wow. Yeah. So, you're right in his neck of the woods, his stomping grounds. You know, there's, you know, any kind of anything where you can perform, or, if there's an improv group, or, you know, like a community theater, anything like that you can get involved in, you know, and even local agents, you know, it's like you could, you know, if you have a reel together or something, you can send that to a local agent, you know, or a regional agent. Especially, you know, the internet day and age where everybody's got, you know, setups, you know, it's so easy to set up a home studio now, you know, where you can record stuff from home and commercials and promos and stuff like that. I, you know, unless it's a video game or animation, I rarely record in a studio.
Nice.
So, you know, I mean, I hope that was a decent answer. I hope that helps you.
Yes.
It's, you know, I mean, there's plenty, you know, like I said, locally, when I lived in Oklahoma, you know, it's like I did anywhere that I worked, I always did, you know, if they did any kind of advertising, you know, I got the owners to let me be the voice of the company, you know, to do that kind of stuff, you know, to do their commercials and their radio spots and stuff like that. So.
Very awesome. Very
There's
awesome.
Lots of stuff. Lots
Very
of
awesome,
stuff to get
yes.
started. And when you do that, when you come out here, you know, when you do make your way to Los Angeles, finally, you've got a little bit of a background that you can use, because you're going to get asked. You know, it's like well, what have you done? Where have you been? You know, who do you know? That kind of stuff. It's like those are like the first three questions an agent asks you before they sit down to have a meeting. So. You know, it's always good to kind of already have a bunch of stuff in your hip pocket.
Yeah,
very
that's awesome.
Good to know.
Yes. All right. Anything else you want to ask him, Steve?
What is the recent fascination with people making memes of you? I've seen a few of them already.
You know, I don't know. It's been kind of funny. I've lived a very, well, I mean, just from sitting here talking to you guys, just telling you things that I've done in my life, I don't know any different. Those are the things I've done in my life. Here recently, I've had a few friends and acquaintances and, you know, come out of the woodwork and be like, well, we don't believe any of that stuff. Most of them have witnessed the things that have happened, you know? So it's just like, I've got this real weird kind of, and a couple of my friends that, you know, kind of called BS on the friends that were calling BS on me, were just kind of like, look, man, you were there when it happened. You know, it's like, how can you sit there and say that did not happen to him when you were right there and you witnessed it, you know? So this whole thing of me being, you know, being the young version of the most interesting man in the world has started to float around, because it's like the voice actors, They'll be like, you know everybody. You know, it's like a new voice actor will come up and they'll be like, my gosh, you know everybody. It's like, well, I'm just a dude. You know, it's like I've lived my life, and these people have come in or out of my life one way or the other. You know, it's kind of weird. When I was a kid in high school, you know, Nicolas Cage came through our hometown and they were shooting a movie, and he found out that I had a pretty extensive Superman comic book collection. Nicolas Cage would come over to my house and sit down on my bedroom floor with me and look at my Superman comics with me. You know, I mean, I was a senior in high school and Nicolas Cage is hanging out at my house, you know, and we've been friends ever since. You know, it's like I've sold him some comics. I've bought some comics from him and, you know, just all kinds of weird stuff. You know, it's like I've led a very, very strange and surreal and interesting life. And the memes, I think, kind of evolved out of people trying to call me out as being full of crap. And so that's how the at least the last one that I saw started out as. I think it was the most interesting man in the world, and he's on top. He's the photo on top going, "I don't always," and it's me down at the bottom going, "Bitch, please."
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the latest. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's the latest.
There's another one further down that says, "Give that man a cookie."
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw that one. I saw that one too. Someone else made that one, like right on the heels of that one. But there's been a few others. There's been a few like Weaponeers of Mon Ka memes pop up that I've noticed, and those are cracking me up. You know, it's like the dude that does the alien thing on the History Channel. He's got the big freaking Babylon 5 haircut with the.
Oh yeah.
And there's a picture of him where he's just kind of like, hey, yeah, yeah. He's got this look on his face, and he goes, "I don't want to say it was Monkarians. But it was Monkarians, you know." It's like the Weaponeers of Mon Ka. So, you know, it's like Cybertronians, Thundarians, you know, Eternians, Monkarians. So anyway, it's like I've noticed quite a few memes popping up lately. You know, it's like and again, it's like I keep telling everybody, it's like, man, I'm just some dude who's just trying to pay his rent. You know, I can make my car payments. Yeah, it's just but I'm also a very approachable person. You know, I don't know a stranger. You know, I'll talk to anybody, and I'll, you know, people were walking by our table at Comic-Con just kind of like, you know, looking at our toys, flipping stuff over, and everybody that walked by. And if I had a dollar for every time I said this during Comic-Con, we could have paid for our booth just on this. But everybody that walked by, I said, "Happy Comic-Con." You know, just. And everybody that was looking at their feet had their bottom lip dragging, their head came up and they smiled and they were like, "Yeah, happy Comic-Con," you know? I mean, and it's, and that's, you know, and then they would stop and I'd wind up talking to them for 10 or 15 minutes, you know? And it's just, and they, you know, they didn't know what I was selling, what I had there, you know? It just, I don't know a stranger. I kind of, you know, I engage everybody that I come into contact with. So, and I think that kind of bugs a few people that I know that, you know, aren't like that.
You know.
I think it's a cool trait.
Yeah, I think it's cool as well. It just, I have this whole thing now where I've lived in Louisville, Kentucky for, God,
he's
20
a recluse.
Years. Yeah, I've become a recluse because I hate dealing with people in the real world.
Mike's like, digital or go home.
Yeah.
Well, we live out in the sticks because of that. I'm kind of an isolationist too, in the fact that when it's time for me to be on, I'm on. But yeah. when it's time for me, when I need a breather, I go as far away from people as I can. I guess I grew up Southern Arizona, you know, just outside of an Indian reservation, an Apache Indian reservation, and I'm a quarter Apache myself. So, you know, my wife gets terrified on my birthday when I'm literally out in the back hills running around with all the coyotes, you know, and she's just like, "You're going to get rabies," you know, and I'm like, no, I need, you know, it's kind of how I etch a sketch, you know, it's my new year, you know, it's like I go out and sit on a hillside for, you know, for a day and a half and just, you know, stay away from people, you know, and it just, you know, and then I'm ready to attack my year. That's coming up, actually. I got about, what is it, the 5th? Yeah, 23rd, so... I'll be running up the hillside, up the back of the hillside, and, you know, rolling around in the dirt with the coyotes here in about a half a month.
Oh my God, an old Mowgli! Holy crap!
Yeah, yeah, an old fat Mowgli.
like Jungle Book 3: The story of how Mowgli got fat.
Yeah, like, who is that? Who is that? It's like, I used to joke with people too. That old picture of Bigfoot.
Yeah,
that's not Bigfoot. That's my dad on a camping trip. He got caught skinny dipping.
Oh man! All right.
Well, it's been fun chatting with Brian. We're going to chat with him some more stuff you people won't be able to hear because we're going to try to bribe him. For now, for Geekcast Radio, I have been TFG and Mike with
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And of course, our our guest has been Mr. Brian T. Stevenson. Give the people a voice to close the show out on.
Hey, thank you very much for listening. And hey, don't park next to my car or I'll key your stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, he went with the New York accent. Holy crap. We will catch you next time. Unleash the Geek in You.
Epic fail.
The Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. The Transformers,
robots in disguise.
The Transformers, more than meets the eye. The Transformers.
Oh no, wait a minute. This is where it gets really good.
If you want to hear the rest of that story, tune in to Transformers Prime Time, coming soon from the Geekcast Radio Network. We have no idea when, but in the future, Transformers Prime Time.
We Decepticons now face our darkest hour.